This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12, and no, there is no conspiracy to put the call on just before midday that it flirts with the parameters of being hinged, but just a coincidence that it's happened on the last couple of days. Time now for Mystery Hour. 3 minutes after 12 is the time, and I've solved one mystery for you. John Mundy, the legend who does our voiceovers here on this programme, was actually listening the other day when someone rang in and asked, I can't remember why I let them, given that it can't possibly have been on topic, why it is Mystery Hour with James O'Brien rather than James O'Brien's Mystery Hour. And John had recorded and sent in an adjusted version before anyone had even got in touch with him. But as you may have noticed, we haven't used it because there's a reason why it is Mystery Hour with James O'Brien as opposed to James O'Brien's Mystery Hour that I will share with you a little later in the programme. But before that, you need to ring in with your questions. And of course, if you hear someone else ask a question, ring in with your answers. There's nothing else to add except perhaps we try to avoid dullness, although that's very much in the ear of the beholder. We try to avoid repetition, although that's an increasingly forlorn task as the personnel on the programme change with every passing season, and my ability to remember what happened yesterday, never mind last week or indeed 5 years ago, it's never been great. And we used to have a rule about not liking motoring questions, but oddly, I'm even sort of, I nearly said growing out of that, but that would involve me admitting that my previous antipathy towards matters motoring may have been somewhat childish or immature, and I'm not sure I'm ready to do that just yet. If you hear someone ask a question and you can answer it, ring in. I'll ask you, if you're new to this, what your qualifications are. And you don't have to say, I've got a PhD in applied mathematics. You could just say, I saw it on the telly last night. I just want to know how you know the thing that you've just told us. All right? I'd also ask you to be polite to Ava and Shivani, who are asking the phones today, because for reasons that perhaps will elude me for the rest of my life, tempers get more frayed, I think because it's so hard to get through. Tempers get more frayed during this hour than they do even during our conversations about politics and prime, even, well, maybe it's close, but just be nice, will you? I mean, have a crack at me if we're arguing about politics or something like that, but don't have a crack at my colleagues when they're trying to get through as many phone calls as they humanly can in as little time as possible, all right? 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Noel is in Bracknell. Question or answer, Noel?
Question, James.
Carry on.
Okay, I'd like to know if we can find out when was the first known use of wallpaper.
You're trolling me. This is ridiculous. This is the hour of the week where I step away from the news agenda and immerse myself in trivia and frivolity, and you've steered us right. I mean, this is any roll of wallpaper, or does it have to be 800-pound rolls of wallpaper?
No, any roll.
Any roll. When was wallpaper first used? I imagine, not that you asked for my imaginings, I wouldn't be surprised if it had something to do with Prince Albert.
Prince Albert.
Yeah, I don't know why.
English history there, so not my forte.
No, I know, but I don't know why. He seems to have been something of an aesthete. You know, the Victoria and Albert Museum is very big on you know, that kind of thing. Prior to Albert's arrival in this country, I don't know. I'll find out for you.
I reckon it'll be earlier than that. I think it'll probably be the Georgians started it, I think. But I don't know for sure.
Yeah, no, so quite possibly. I shall find out for you. Someone will know, and I'd love to. I can't wait, actually, to hear what the qualifications are for that one. I hope it's not. I saw it on telly last night. I hope it is somebody who perhaps could comment on whether or not a £12,000 owl lantern is something that was quite correctly purchased for the heritage and posterity of the nation, as Grant Shapps seemed to claim yesterday. Daniel's in Hoddesdon. Daniel, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
How far can you see with the naked eye before the curvature of the Earth stops you seeing any further?
We did this about a month ago. Even my short-term memory's up to this question.
I must have been on a job at the time.
No, that's all right. I'll dig it out from... I don't know. Are we still doing the Mystery Hour archive since Adrian moved on? I don't know if we are. We should probably double-check. But we did that about a month ago. Can you remember the answer, Keith? There is a figure, and it's maritime law. A ship's captain rang in to answer
it. Yeah, because that's where I was going to go with it. Yeah. If you're at sea and you can't see any land,
that's right.
The horizon, well, how far is it?
Do you know, I'm going to have to let someone on to answer the question with the qualification that they were paying more attention to Mystery Hour a month ago than the professionals that present and produce the programme.
I'll go with that.
Fantastic. Yeah, all right. Thanks for that, mate. Daniel did a cheer. So that's why we used to have the repetition rule. Annie is in Guildford. Annie, question or answer?
Hi, good morning. Sorry, good afternoon.
Hello.
I'm just curious. I'm a chef, and I was wondering, if I was walking through the jungle and there was an egg on the ground and I was hungry, could I cook that egg from any animal, be it a snake or a lizard or just a wild bird? Could I cook that, or would I get poisoned from eating that egg? Just any egg. Can you eat any egg?
Snake egg? What about a venomous snake's egg?
That's what I'm asking, because these people were walking through the jungle and they found these two eggs. I saw this the other day.
What were you doing in the jungle? You live in Guildford.
No, I was watching a programme. I won't tell what it was called. But they were walking through the jungle. They found these eggs. They put them in a bamboo pipe and they steamed them and they ate the eggs. And I was thinking, if that was a venomous snake, surely they'd be poisoned because there'd be venom in that egg. But they didn't. They were fine. But then they ate some underripe bananas and got really sick. So I can't work out if you could get sick.
What was this programme?
It's called, can I say?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay, it's called Naked and Afraid, where they just dump these people in the jungle and then they have to forage and live for 21 days, find water, find food and survive. And they got really sick from underripe bananas.
And they're just ordinary people, are they? It's like a reality show.
Yeah, and they go in with like a figure of a number of how much they're going to survive, and they're left there for 21 days, and then they have to be extracted, get to a point, and get removed from the jungle.
God, and they still haven't commissioned Monkey Tennis, but they've made Naked and Afraid. What is the world coming to? Can you eat any egg? That's a really lovely question. In fact, I'd go far as to say, wait for it. Annie, that's an excellent... No, sorry, I won't do it. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm not going there. Keith wouldn't bear it. Thank you, Annie. When was wallpaper first used? Can you remember the call from about a month ago telling us how far you can see the horizon from the naked eye? It depends partly on how tall you are, but there's a maritime answer to that question. And to my eternal shame, I can't remember what it is. And eggs. Can you eat any old egg? Any old egg, any old egg, any old egg. Paul's in Morecambe, or... Do you know my Morecambe story, Paul?
No, I don't, James.
Well, when I was a lad, when I first started at private school, we never really had fancy holidays when I was a kid. There's a reason, and it's because I was going to private school, so there wasn't enough money left over for fancy holidays. But some of the kids I went to school with did go on fancy holidays, and I can't remember why, but I think I may even have been moaning slightly about it, and they were going to places like Ibiza and... Mallorca and Barbados. And my dad said to me, and I didn't know why this was funny, but I remember it making my mum laugh her socks off. He said, tell him you went to Morecambe. So I went back to school. I went back to school the next day and told all the kids that I'd been on my holidays to Morecambe. And it still took me years to work out why the teacher looked at me with such pity. Anyway, question or answer, Paul?
It's a question.
Carry on.
Why do electric cars have to have this specialised plug to plug in your house? Why can't it just be a 3-pin plug, like we plug everything else in with?
But you plug it in your house at one end, but it's not everything else. Your mobile phone has a specialised plug.
Right, so it does.
Oh, but that's small. That's a size issue. So why can't you just stick a 3-pin plug in your car?
Yeah. I mean, you can plug everything, like you say, from a mobile charger to a cement mixer in to your house electric, so
this
it's not the actual electrics, is it? So what is it that makes it so... have to be such a specialised plug?
We're talking about the plug that goes into the car.
Well, whichever way it goes. But it goes into the car, but you know what I mean? It's like...
But I've never seen one. I'm not being thick. I have genuine ignorance. Can you not just plug it into any socket at one end and then stick it in the car at the other end?
Well, this is what I don't know. What I have seen people with electric cars, they just have this running box with a cable on it. So it
yes, but
like
they must be able to... Or do they, though? Because then you
I
see...
I don't know.
No, nor do I now. So, but this is the problem, Paul. There are two mysteries now, and you're only allowed to ask one. We've got what end of the cable are we talking about?
No, it's still basically the same thing, isn't it? It doesn't matter which end the cable is, because you can just, you should be able to.
Is it going
to
be the same?
Why can't they make a cable where you can just use a 3-pin plug?
Or what about shaver sockets? Oh, that's got something to do with water. Ah, maybe because it rains.
Water.
It rains.
Yeah, but you can still use. Plugs You could still use a lawnmower.
Yeah, but you shouldn't. You can have a sort of rubberized, vulcanized garden plug with a cover over it, but the cover is there to protect the plug when it's raining, but not plugged in. You wouldn't go out in a rainstorm and plug in your Flymo, would you?
You wouldn't.
So that's the answer, I bet.
You think?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can have an outdoor socket.
That's the dog telling you I'm right. He's going, leave it, Paul. Leave it, Paul. James has got this one covered. Leave it.
Okay.
Or is it? We'll find out. I don't know. Why and who and what and when and electric cars. 12:13 is the time. Tim's been in touch to say, James, and they are actually naked, which I'll admit I did a double take at, but it's referring back to Annie's television favourite, Naked and Afraid. Tim, I don't want to sound ungrateful, but when she told me the programme was called Naked and Afraid, I presumed that all of the participants would be both naked and afraid. It's not an entirely reliable measure, I grant you, but it's one that I was prepared to accept in the first instance. Archie is in Reading. Archie, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Yeah. By the way, I have a stroke, so I stutter at times. But
that's fine. Take all the time you want, Archie. You're okay. Among friends.
I have a formula. As I was in the Navy lecturing as an officer, and in teaching radar, we had a formula which was the distance to the horizon in miles is equal to 1.23 times the square root of the height. So it meant, say, the aerial was 50 feet above the sea.
Yes.
Sorry, 100 feet above the sea. Square root, that's 10. So 1.23 times 10 is 12.3 miles. Now, if your eyes were, say, 6 feet above the land, then the square root of 6 is roughly 2.4, and 1.23 times that is roughly 3 miles.
Good grief. That's brilliant. And qualifications, you lectured on this in the Navy?
Yes, I was a short service officer, and I taught at the Barrar School in Faslian, and also HMS Dryad, where I taught computers as well as radar.
Fantastic work.
So we needed to, we just did it so that the students would know roughly how far with, say, a radar for just where the ship was, could see, and then why we needed a different type of radar to see long distances.
Oh, blimey. What a beautiful answer. Archie, accept a round of applause with my compliments.
Thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you very much indeed. Cracking job. And the time is 12:16.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
90 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour continues. Questions in need of answers include the wallpaper one, the eggs one, and the electric car plug one, which came close to reminding me of why I used to have a moratorium on motoring-related questions, but not close enough. Terry is in Bournemouth. Terry, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Terry.
Well, in my previous guise a couple of years ago, I still am a qualified electrician, and I've installed car chargers, and the reason that the plugs are different and the leads are different is it's all to do with the rate of charge. So if you plug an ordinary main plug type charger that's normally supplied with the vehicle, for I'm looking at you're looking at time.
Yes.
It takes a long time to charge at that rate because
capacity.
The best analogy for electricity is think of water. If you had a tank of water with a tiny little pipe, it would take ages to drain down.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had the same tank of water with a large bore pipe, it would really quickly. That's a good analogy.
It's a great analogy.
Electrical principles teacher taught us at West Ham College years ago.
West Ham College, eh? How many years ago was that?
1977 onwards.
Good
so.
Grief. And here it is. Here it is. Galloping to Mystery Hour magic in 2021. I love that. So, I mean, you could do it with a normal three-pin plug, but it would take ages.
It takes longer. It's to do with the rate of charge. Those big, powerful chargers are actually charging at hundreds of volts. 480 volts, if I remember off the top of my head, for a Nissan Leaf. Other cars are available, of course.
Indeed they are. Briefly, and don't forgive me if this is a really stupid question, what does it do? To continue with your sort of water analogy, is it sucking more electricity out of the national grid than it would be without the special plug?
Well, yeah, it will be. I mean, I won't bore you with technicals, but
you wouldn't be boring me. You'd just be confusing. Okay, well, you'd just be confusing me. But I'll try my best.
If you ever want, anyone ever wants to look into it, just look up Ohm's law. But basically, the more current or the more charge that you put in,
yeah,
the more current you have to
provide.
Got
it. I got it. So with a 13-amp plug in it would take flipping ages.
It would take ages, whereas if you've got a specialist charger, then the current flow is
I got
is
it. No, that's
so
a mean
qualification. Charges quicker.
Beautiful work. I remember Ohm. I believe it or not, I got an E in my AO level physics or my O level.
You go to Greece, don't you?
Quite a lot, yeah, but don't rub it in, mate. Not for a while. Why?
Omega.
What?
It's from the symbol for Ohm.
Oh, Ohm is. Yes, of course. Omega. Yes, of course it is. Is it Omega or Omicron? It's Omega. You're absolutely right. Oh, flipping it. We're covering a lot of ground here, Terry. We've gone from West Ham to the Greek alphabet while answering your question about electric car chargers. Round of applause. Yes, of course you can. Of course you can. Go on.
Why on the first... when you first open the show, do you say question or answer when there is no question being posed?
What is the name of this feature?
Say that again.
What is the name of the feature to which you are currently contributing?
Well, it's question time.
No.
Mystery Hour with James
O'Brien. It's Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. So what better way than to inaugurate the weekly Mystery Hour than with a mystery that can never be solved?
I love that. I think you need a Rayleigh offer
for that. Round of applause is for you. Qualifications, I'm making up as I go along, but I made that one up a long time ago. Stuart is in Maidenhead. Stuart, question or answer?
Hello, I have a question.
Yes.
When does a roundabout cease to be a roundabout and start being a gyratory system? How large does it need to be?
Am I being trolled by my own colleagues on this one, do you think? I mean, my well-established indifference stroke animosity towards motoring-based questions is usually explained with the example of an actual roundabout. And here we are. And you know what, Stuart? I'm actually quite interested.
Yeah, because I'm kind of puzzled.
Stop it! Sorry, Stuart, you were saying.
I'm puzzled because the higher lane gyratory is a gyratory, but really it's just a big roundabout with like eight lanes at one bit.
Well, is it going to be the number of exits, perhaps?
It could be the number of lanes that exit. Is it the number of traffic lights that's on it? Because my other question is then, somebody might know this, is that I believe Elephant and Castle...
Well, you're only allowed... No, don't spoil it. You've got me interested. We're not going to get down to specific roundabouts. How do you think that's going to play out in Nantwich, Nuneaton or Nunhead? So I like the question. It's a bit like, how big does a pond have to be before it becomes a lake?
Yeah.
Possibly. At what point does a roundabout become or qualify as a gyratory? Oh, I can't believe I'm really interested in the answer to that. I've changed, honestly. I really have. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Liam is in Watford. Liam, question or answer?
Hi, James. My question is... I've got a question, sorry.
Yes.
My question is light pollution naturally luminous? So I'd like to know, if you were to turn off every light source in, say, for example, the City of London, would the night sky still glow orange as it sort of currently does of an evening? Or would it, I don't know, would it go away? I mean, I assume you wouldn't be able to see the stars through it, but would there still be that glow?
Is that glow light pollution?
Well, I think so.
I just thought of the sunset then.
Well, yes, but then it's still there, isn't it? If you were to venture outside your house at like 3 a.m, not that you would, but if you were,
well,
or
back
to look outside your window,
I might have done. Yeah.
Well, you might have done. Yeah. The night sky sort of glows kind of an orange colour.
So what we want to know is what would happen to the sky if we turned off every single light. But that, surely you just need to go to the seaside, don't you?
Well, no, because at the seaside, You don't have the sort of level of...
That's what I mean. So you'd find out what it was like if there weren't any lights on.
Well, no, because you'd be able to see the stars. Whereas in London, you can't see the stars because of the pollution level. Am I right?
I don't know. You've lost me a bit, which is a reflection on me, not on you.
Perhaps it's on me.
Well, it could be both. Let's split the difference. 52 me, 48 you. So if we turned off all the lights in London, what would the sky look like?
Well, would it still glow orange in a way that it does?
Seems unlikely.
I don't know if you've ever been driving down the M11.
Oh, we're doing it again.
Down the
I've just taken a question
London.
On roundabouts. I'm not going to have a motorway-based analogy.
Okay, right. I'll drop the motorway-based analogy.
I think that's, I understand the question. All right. So the sky reflect. Well, I think it's obvious, but that's why I think I must have misunderstood, because the sky is reflecting from what is below. So if you turned off everything below, there'd be nothing to reflect, surely.
There'd be nothing to reflect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that obvious?
Interesting.
It's on the list.
Okay.
So, well done. And if someone can answer that, I'll be very grateful. 27 after 12. Well played, Liam. Stefan is in Luxembourg. Stefan, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
So I'm amazed with the carry on in the Downing Street, and I just wonder if Johnson and Simmons have to move out of the Downing Street flat so they can keep the furniture.
You're trying to have a break from the politics, Stefan.
Well, I'm still amazed.
It's a good question, and I love it, actually.
Another question would be, if they keep it, is it taxed, or do they have to declare it as an imputed income?
Well, this is one of the things the Electoral Commission would be looking into, I imagine, because if it is a benefit in kind, then it would be subject to very different rules than those which appear to have been followed. But yeah, they must be able to keep it, because Theresa May moved a lot of her stuff out and whatever it was that was... So the 30 grand a year's worth probably stays put, because that is paid for by the taxpayer. But the 60 grand plus that they've spent from mysterious, as yet undisclosed sources, that... presumably they can take with them. Who would know?
She was put off by the John Lewis look.
That suggests
there wouldn't be a John Lewis look if Theresa May would have taken the furniture.
No, that might be the difference between the furniture that was bought with the £30,000 per annum allowance, i.e. that stuff has to stay, and the money spent individually by prime ministers or chancellors, because Rishi Sunak has paid for it himself. So there's no one suggesting for a minute that he should have to give it all back when he moves out of number 11 into number 10.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I am as well. Unfortunately, I don't know who'd be qualified to answer.
Well, any of the ministers.
John Major, Theresa May, Tony Blair, Gordon Brown. Yeah. If an actual prime minister rings in, Stefan, do you think they would deserve a Ray Liotta?
Yes,
all right, as long as we're agreed on that. So when they move out of Downing Street, what do they get to keep? 03456060973, if anything at all. So we've got the Downing Street. Do they keep the furniture? We've got the light pollution, the roundabout. We've done that. Eggs. Can you eat any egg? And when did we start? When was wallpaper first used? If you can answer those, there is a wonderful mystery hour. Round of applause just dangling in front of you like a juicy fruit. And it could be yours for the price of a phone call. 03456060973. It's coming out to 12:30. Tim Humphrey is here with your headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:33, Mystery Hour continues with James O'Brien. That's an in-joke, all right? Not that in, given that I explained it half an hour ago, but... I haven't explained it yet, have I? So the reason why it's Mystery Hour with James O'Brien and not James O'Brien's Mystery Hour, which is what the board game will be called, is branding across the whole station. So John Mundy, who is our voiceover guru, unprompted and unasked, sent in an amended version after someone earlier in the week said, why isn't it James O'Brien's Mystery Hour? I said, a Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. So I was expecting to hear it, and I didn't hear it at 12 o'clock. So I said to Keith, why didn't I hear it? And Keith said to me, he said, well, James, the thing is, it's all about branding across the station. So it's cross questions with Ian Dale, cross questions with Ian Dale, not Ian Dale's cross questions. It could be James O'Brien's cross callers, couldn't it? Some days. And then it is, you know, Call the Cabinet with Nick Ferrari, Legal Hour with Daniel Barnett. So it's just sort of brand consistency is what you might call it. And, of course, I don't have to comply with that when the board game hits a shop near you shortly. 12:34 is the time. Graham is in Cambridge. Graham, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. I've got a question.
Carry on.
Why is it why is it that when a police camera is out of action...
Well, you mean on a road?
They know, on the side of a road.
Right, wait there a minute. What? Just sorry, Graham. Would you excuse me for, like, one moment?
Yeah.
All right. You think this is funny, do you? Yeah? Loads and loads of motoring questions today.
No.
Not just, you, just, Graham. Graham, oh, I asked you to excuse me. I'm addressing the troops.
All right.
Look at me when I'm talking to you. You think this is funny? Yeah? All right. All right, carry on. You didn't have to say it quite that loudly. Graham, my apologies for interrupting you. Please continue with your fascinating motoring-based inquiry.
Yeah, well, the question is, why is it when a police camera is out of action on the side of the road and they put a sack over it or a sign saying not in use, when surely it's beneficial to safety to have it still, you know, lead us to believe that it is still operative, you know, still working?
That is actually a mildly interesting question. I am surprised. I mean, would it not be so they know which one to fix?
I don't know. They should know what ones to fix, shouldn't they?
There's a lot of them, and you can't be just pulling over and checking the serial number or something like that, and you can't be counting while you're driving, can you? Because you wouldn't be concentrating on the road. So get yourself down the M11. I'm doing it myself now. Get yourself down the M11. We've got a camera that needs fixing. Graham says, which one, James? And I said, well, the one with the flipping hood on it, obviously, Graham. What else are you going to do? Get out and check every single one to see if it's still... So it's got to be that, hasn't it?
They would have a database. They would know exactly which ones
are. Yeah, but how are you going to know when you've passed it on the road?
Yeah, good point.
Thank you. Oh no! Yes. And now I've answered a motion.
I'd like to know the answer.
Well, I think you've just got it, mate. Don't be so ungrateful.
There must be someone out there that knows the reason why.
Because they wouldn't know that that was the one that needed fixing.
They must know. There must be a database of the ones that have gone down.
Yes, but again, I'm going round in roundabouts now, because that would be impossible to find unless you were distracted from actually driving, especially pre-GPS as well. It might, I mean, now these days you could put in like a coordinates and it would start pinging when you were near, but we're talking about practices that predate the proliferation of GPS, aren't we? Oh man, I sound like a petrol head.
You do.
Oh Lord. Alright, you're on the list. It's a nice question. Sure. If I get another question about motoring, can you tell Sheila Fogarty to be on her toes, because I might be clocking off early today. 12:37 is the time. Tony is in Manchester. Tony, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
I've got several answers, but I'm told I'm on the loud one.
That's correct. So make sure you follow those very, very strict rules.
I absolutely will.
Thank you.
The answer is about the answer is about naked and afraid and snake eggs.
Oh yes.
So the answer is quite simply that the venom sacs in snake develop quite late in the embryological process.
Right.
And in fact, there's a clue in the fact that snakes, venomous snakes and their eggs have been eaten for eons by humans with no ill effects.
Oh,
you actually eat a snake, as long as you remove the egg sac, the venom sac, and don't eat that, it'll taste like chicken. Winner, chicken dinner, chicken tasting dinner, as I put in my email to you.
Very nice. And as you've discovered, I don't read out emails, so I'm glad you've called in. Well, I don't read out emails during Mystery Hour. I'm flipping slack at it the rest of the time, because the phones are always so busy. But Mystery Hour is immune from text, tweet and email contributions. What if the egg was in the late embryonic stage? What if the embryo was in a late stage while it was still in the egg? How would someone planning to eat the egg even know that?
It would be a bad idea to do that.
Yeah, but then, how are you going to know?
Well, there's an easy way. Most people won't eat an egg once there's a half-formed chicken in it, and that's a chicken egg. By the time the venom sac has developed, you've got pretty much a fully formed snake in the egg.
So you wouldn't... Yeah, again, I don't quite... I mean, you could hold it up to a bright light. What happens in the jungle? Do we know?
Well, I'd assume that you crack the egg.
You're not going to eat it until... Oh, Tony, mate, I am such a flump. I mean, because I think you've been too polite. I think you probably couldn't believe how stupid my question was.
I'm trying really hard not to be James O'Brien, to be honest.
Just go all in, mate. Go all in. Tear my head off. Seriously, you'll be viral by tea time.
I am actually a bit devastated. I've been wanting to call in for ages and ages and ages, but this is the first time I've caught the show live. I usually catch stuff on YouTube after the fact.
Well, here you are now. It's even better, isn't it, in real life?
And I'm a science blogger who writes about science, logic, scepticism.
Oh, fantastic.
Haven't read your book yet, but it's on my list.
Good.
And I'm actually currently in the process of writing two books, one about the logic of leadership and effective team building.
Oh, yes.
in the context of How to Win Hell's Kitchen, the US version with Gordon Ramsay, because it's a popular show and I figure...
No, it's a good case study.
The sort of people who really need the education on logic and critical thinking aren't the sort of people who are going to pick up a book on
logic and leadership thinking, but they might pick up a book about Hell's Kitchen. I like it a lot. Just for the benefit of the tape, the reason you didn't answer my incredibly stupid question is that nobody really eats an egg without cracking it first.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to.
No, I know that now, but that's just what I kept asking you. Oh, hang on a minute. You're going to hold it up to the light, which completely overlooked the fact that you're not going to eat an egg.
Yeah.
As they say, Tony, you may be familiar with this figure of speech. You can't make an omelette without cracking eggs.
So just for fun, I sent an email answer to the pollution question.
All right.
I can answer the last caller's question as well.
No, you can't. I'm going to cut you off with a round of applause and bid you farewell.
All right.
Mind there you go.
You
definitely will. I sense it. And there you go. Tony discovering the joys of the James O'Brien experience in real time as opposed to... Yes, it is called the James O'Brien Experience, all right, if I say so. Not the experience with James O'Brien. That's an entirely different proposition. In real time, in real life, as opposed to on... I don't know that the YouTube clips are desperately representative of this programme, because they're usually the sort of one call in every 10 or 20 when someone has an accident on the programme. But hey-ho. I suppose I'm just suggesting that I'm... Much more mellow, perhaps, than some of the viral clips allow, especially these days. 12:41's the time. Leron is in Woolwich. Lee, what would you like to say? Question or answer? Question or answer, even.
I'd like to try and answer the question about light pollution.
Oh, crack on then. I didn't even understand it, so this will be fun.
Well, okay, so my understanding of it is this. Okay, if you were to shine a torch at a ball, and you got a football and you shone a torch at it, you would light up the ball, but you'd also light up the area around that ball.
Right.
And that would be your light pollution.
Yeah.
So all of the light, all of the street lights and car lights and basically all the light sources in a built-up area do sort of give off a bit of pollution. So you get sort of like a glow all around that area that's lit up.
Yeah.
And that is going up into the sky. And that's why I've recently started amateur astronomy. And I've found that I have to travel out of London to get a better view of the night sky. You can view the stars from London, but the further afield you go, the further out you go, the better your view will be.
But if they turned off all the lights in London... The ball would still be there, but it wouldn't be lit up.
The ball would still... I'm trying to just... Hold on.
Because the ball is the pollution. Oh, I knew this was going to happen.
No, the ball isn't the pollution. Right, okay, so...
Well, it is in the question. I know. Go on.
So, I'm shining a torch, a ball, a football, right?
Yeah.
That's where I want my main concentration of light to go. But then also, all of the whole room in around this ball is lit up.
Yeah, but if I turn off the torch, the ball is still there.
The ball is still there, but the
But all the spare lights. So if we turned off all the lights in London, what our caller called light pollution would not be there.
It wouldn't be there.
That's what I thought. It was as simple a question as I believed it to be.
If I had an empty room and I popped a basketball in there and I shone a torch at this basketball, right?
Yeah.
The ball would get lit up and so would the rest of the room.
Yeah, I got it.
If I turned the torch off, the ball would still be there, but the rest of the room would be dark. So your sky is dark. It's just like when the moon's out, you don't get it now. As clear. Okay,
what are you doing? A lap of honour? I understand what you've told me. Qualifications taking up astronomy. It's not much fun. Fun in a built-up city, and it's got more to do with light pollution than it has with pollution, like air pollution.
That's right.
In fact, I think the caller got the two mixed up. To be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, I just want to add, you even get a bit of light pollution from the moon as well, because that's bouncing light off the reflection of the sun, light into the sky. Astronomy is better when the moon's not there.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Round of applause for Leron.
Cheers, bye-bye.
How big is your telescope?
Do you know what?
That was for Keith.
It's all right for a starter telescope. It's an Astro Master 130 Celestrion.
Yeah, no, it sounds smart.
It's all right for a beginner's.
Carry on. And you don't want to front up too much cash until you found out whether it's one of those hobbies that ends up in the loft or whether it's one of the few that actually make it make it through for the long run. I love that. Thank you, Leon. It's coming up to 1:45. You're listening to Mystery Hour with James O'Brien on LBC.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:49. I am surprised that no one has phoned in to say that Ohm's Law is named after a man named Ohm. O-H-M. It's nothing to do with the Greek alphabet, Alistair. Alistair, allow me to put you out of your misery. The reason no one has rung in to question that point is because nobody else is confused by it. You're absolutely right. George Ohm, I think his name was, actually. But the Ohm, the Greek letter omega, is the unit of measure, the abbreviation of the unit of measure for resistance. So, you know, what is the resistance in that thing of me? It's 6 ohms. And you would use the omega Greek letter to express ohm in the same way that V is short for volt and A is short for amp or indeed ampere. So there you go. Bespoke answer for you on that, just because I didn't understand the question. And so I took a moment to work it out. Stephen is in Milton Keynes. Stephen, question or answer?
I've got a question for you, sir.
Carry on.
Well, I was going to ask about the car, but I'll go past that one.
Yeah, thank you.
When dogs are looking to go for a toilet, what is it that they are sniffing for before they go?
Is that someone laughing in the background, or is that a dog?
That's your dog, and it's not my dog.
Whose dog is that?
I don't know.
It's laughing at you, Stephen.
That dog is literally
laughing at you on national radio, mate. You're getting owned by a dog.
I don't think it's just the dog. I think everyone is at the moment.
Can't believe that you... This is a bloke over there. Oi. Spot. There's a geezer over there on the phone. I don't know who he's talking to. He wants to know why we sniff around before we do our business. And then the other dog's gone... Let's hear him.
Yes.
Point the phone at... Go on. What? He's gone quiet now. He's embarrassed. He didn't realise he was going to be on the radio.
Yes. All right. There you go.
You can tell it's live today, can't you, Stephen? He's back again. He liked that one. Oh, I snorted. I'll endeavour to get you an answer. I presume they're marking their territory, so they're making sure no one else. No, what? Oh, it's not that.
No, apparently not. No. Even in our own garden, you know, it's special.
I know. I'll make sure that she or he hasn't been to the same place before.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Hang on, that could be it. He's nodding now. Stay there. I'll introduce you to a celebrity dog trainer, our friend Vieri, otherwise known as Dr. Dog. What's the dog? It's not your dog in the background, Stephen.
That's not my dog, no.
All right. So I won't introduce your dog because it isn't your dog, but Dr. Dog is here. So I'll introduce Dr. Dog to Stephen.
Hi, James.
Hello, Dr. Dog. Why are they sniffing around before they do their doings?
They're just trying to find the sweet spot, as it were.
Meaning?
But the more important question is why they're turning around in circles. Because
no, I know that. I know that. Stop it. Stop it. Stop bigging up your part. I don't know what the sweet spot means.
Both. No, I'm joking. The reason why they sniff is because they do this all the time.
But are they looking for a bit that is on, a bit that they haven't used before, a bit that no other dog has used before?
Well, maybe they're just looking for something to inspire them to.
But you know, you're not answering this seriously. There must be. Why don't they go until they've had a good sniff?
Because they need to have a good sniff before they go.
It's turned into a philosophical conundrum. So that we or at least you don't know.
Nobody knows.
No, well, because they haven't told a wild geography teacher.
Yes. I can tell you why they turn around in circles.
Yeah, go on then.
Well, actually, there's a real good answer to that. And the reason is because they're looking for the north-south magnetic axis of the Earth's magnetic field. What they've actually done is, get this, 80 dogs have been watched for 2 years by German and Danish students defecating. So can you imagine these students watch dogs for 2 years doing their business?
It's a bit like Keith's job.
Yes, great. Lovely job. So at the end of that, they suddenly realize that the reason why dogs turn around in circles before they poop, not before they pee, but before they poop, is because they're trying to align themselves to about 90% of the time on the north-south axis. And that is the proof that mammals are what's known as magnetosensitive.
Wow.
Which is what we know from migratory birds, we know that from insects and stuff, but we've never been able to prove it from mammals.
Well, that's
like
incredible.
Elephants migrate and whales migrate.
Do we know why they do it? We've established that they do it, and causation is correlation in this case, but what do we know why they do it?
No, again, it's the
does it
same
ease?
Answer.
Does it
they
ease?
Haven't told us.
Does it ease the process, I wonder?
Well, I don't know. It's a bit of dog feng shui, I guess.
Dog so feng shui. It is exactly that. Stephen, that's not what you rang in for, but I hope you consider that to be an unexpected bonus.
You know, I'll take it.
Hot
I'll take
feng shui.
It.
There we go. And has your canine friend moved on, or do will we have a chance of canvassing their opinion about Dr. Dog's contribution to the programme today?
The dog is now gone. So, yes.
That was just
lovely. But I'll take the
round of applause for Vieri, please. Dr. Dog himself. No, thank you. 12:54 is the time. See, there'll be some people listening who hate dog questions with the same passion that I hate or used to hate motoring questions. Yeah, well, get your own radio show. John's in Palmer's Green. John, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, John.
It's the wallpaper question.
Oh, yeah.
And my knowledge of it is through the National Trust.
Go on.
I'm a member of the National Trust, and there's 16 properties that have Chinese wallpaper dating from 1700s. But the volunteers that work there, they do some research into wallpapers and all different things in the National Trust.
Yeah, and they tell them to be careful. If they're doing research, they might get attacked by the Daily Telegraph.
They might do, yeah. That could be a big problem.
Just be on your toes. Go on. What's the discovery?
Oh, the Chinese used wallpaper 200 years BC. They used rice paper to decorate their walls.
Are you serious?
So I was told by the... by one of the women working there.
That'll do me. That qualifications, National Trust guide, with a bit of an interest in war. 200 years BC, they were putting up paper.
That's a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah, but no one's going to argue with that, John.
No.
Not even me.
Apparently, one of the National Trust properties, I think it's called Saltram House, there's a guy that does a book on wallpaper. So
is there really?
If the man who phoned in is that interested, he could go there and buy a copy of this wallpaper book.
That's you told, isn't it? John, round of applause for you. Well played.
Well, thanks very much.
No, thank you very much. Be careful with that research, though. Seriously, you could end up being accused of being a member of the woke brigade and attacked by the right-wing media for doing research into actual things that what happened in history. 12:56 is the time. Livio is in Islington. Livio, question or answer?
Oh, it's an answer, James.
All right. Was that your horn or has someone else got it?
No, I'm actually in Palmer's Green as well at the moment because I'm a bus driver.
It's a small world,
and,
isn't it?
It is a small world. And the answer is to the gyratory question.
Oh, yes.
What is the difference between a roundabout and a gyratory system?
Yes.
A roundabout, imagine even if it had two lanes, if you get into one of the lanes, you could continue going round if you don't move out of it, and it wouldn't lead anywhere. Effectively, you just continue going round the roundabout.
Yeah.
With the gyratory, the lanes are designed in such a way that they spit you out at the right exit, so they sort of corkscrew outwards as it goes around.
Yeah, that
so
works.
Providing you've selected the right lane to start with, you will leave at the right exit.
You'll generally egress down the correct exit. And if you did, and if you wanted to go round and round and round a gyratory, what would happen?
You could.
You'd crash, would you?
You wouldn't crash because it's just the way the lanes are marked. So you could, in theory, continue to go around and round. You'd probably pee a few people off, so to speak.
Because everyone else is driving according to the presumptions and regulations.
Yes.
I love it. Qualifications?
Well, I'm a bus driver. It's part of our test.
Yeah, all right. Don't make it sound like I'm the one being stupid. All right. I'm just going through the motions, Livio. Oh, no.
I know.
Back to the last question. Going through the motions. Round of applause for Livio.
Thank you.
Round of applause for Lino as well, actually. I know I don't normally read in tweets, but the fellow who rang in from Morecambe, and I said to him, do you know my Morecambe story, Paul? And Lino tweeted, memo to self. If James O'Brien ever asks, do you know my blank story, always answer yes. Have you heard it before? Tony's on Merseyside. Tony, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's about the speed cameras.
Oh, yes.
Basically, under legislation, you've got to notify motorists that there is speed cameras or radar cameras or whatever they call it, the latest one. You think like on the M6, there's no speed cameras, but the speed camera signs. That's because local authorities will put a speed camera in a van on one of the gantries.
Oh, okay.
So when it's got the not in use sign on, it's just to notify motorists that it's not in use, obviously. The other thing is, they're usually set up ready for roadworks or average speed cameras, etc. But like if they've got roadworks in the future. So there you go. So you've got to be notified so you can have a country lane.
Yeah, but you've got to be notified that there might be a speed camera. There's no legal requirement to notify you that there isn't, surely.
Exactly. So there's no notification that it's a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit because it is in, a built-up area. So the presumption is there aren't any speed cameras, so they notify people to say there are speed cameras.
Yeah, I know, but why then, if it was broken, then you'd be better off leaving it on, like a sort of empty alarm box on the front of your house.
They don't say that it's broken.
They just say not in use.
Yeah, it's not in use because they're not doing the average speed camera checks, etc. So, but they are notified on country lanes, everything like that.
No, I think I understand. Although this is why I don't do motoring questions, Tony, because I'm so slow on the uptake.
I think you've had your fill today, haven't you?
You're not kidding, mate. Seriously. But your qualifications?
I'm a retired police officer. I was police liaison officer for the Highways Agency for 3 years.
That'll do.
2006, 2010.
How many police liaison officers are there for the Highways Agency, roughly?
It depends. When I was in, there were 5.
Right, go on then. That'll do. No, you're in your own line.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much.
They will come.
Okay.
Great work. We're late for Sheila, so sadly we haven't got time to play the Rocky music. Sheila Fogarty, over to you.
Thank you, James. The report that I'm going to talk about, probably for the first 2 hours of the programme, actually, and then depending on your reaction, maybe even more than that, I found, more than shocking, I found disturbing, actually. It was a survey of over 22,000 women and girls. And it looked at their experiences of violence, sexual and otherwise, prior to being 18 and after the age of 18. And given what we've learnt recently in conversations that we've had on air and in your own homes as well, I'm sure some of this won't come as a surprise to you, but some of it, I hope anyway, really, really will. The question is, what do we do about it? So let's talk about that after the news.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.